Are you ready? Hey, you think you could tell us what to do? You think you could tell us what to wear? You think that you're better? Well, you better get ready. Bow to the masters. Break it down!
This is a RentersWarehouse.com roadshow from Sam Houston Race Park. This is The Blitz on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Here's Fred Fowler and A.J. Hoffman.
And we are back on The Blitz. Hour number two, 713-780. ESPN is your number, 713-780-3776. You can also hit us up on The Blitz Facebook page. Find The Blitz, click like, you're good to go. There's also Twitter, at Fred Fowler, F-A-O-U-R, at AJ is the real, at Jonk Snow with a zero in the snow park, at Degenerates975. You can also text the show at 713-780-3776. We're out here at Sam Houston Race Park, opening night of quarter horse racing. And, of course, they have simulcasts from all over the country, which is what Roger and I are pumping at Oaklawn right now. Go for a little score here in the next race.
Where's Oaklawn?
Hot Springs, Arkansas.
Oh.
It is actually a very, very cool track. If you've never been, that's worth the trip because if you...
Nope.
Well,
it's in Arkansas.
It is in Arkansas.
It's a hard no for me.
But I will say this. This is more. It's like more of a retirement community, so it's filled with old, so you wouldn't like it anyway. But the cool thing about that track is if you go for breakfast before the races, that's all anybody talks about. It's like, what do you think of this horse? Even the waitress will come up and say, okay, what do you want? I'd like a hot dog, not a sandwich. And then she'll start talking about the third race and what you think about the third race and the horses in it and blah, 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 blah. So it's one of those places that's all they do. You just want to visit, like, one day. I mean, you don't want to stay a long time because it is a beautiful area, but you're right, it is Arkansas. 713-780-ESPN is your number. Crom 2's. Says, I think radio's a sport. The sport is for real athletes. AJ is one of them, and the Falcon as well. Those guys are good at sport. I also think the Blitz is a sandwich. Okay, I want what you're smoking.
I don't want to be friends with that guy.
713-780-ESPN. Yeah, there's a – yeah, I don't want to get into that debate, but it's just – I think it's based on an individual definition. I don't think there's an actual definition that fits everything. So – yeah, and I would say, like, if we're going to get into auto racing, did that count?
It was light.
That was so lame, but it technically was a burp at 5:03. But, you know, stuff like, and I used to race motocross when I was a kid. I mean, that took a lot. I mean, that was hand-eye. That was, you had to make decisions. Even though the motorcycle's doing the work, you're guiding it. But I would say IndyCar racing more challenging than NASCAR because there's more than...
I've never driven one of those cars, so I have no idea.
I don't know that I'd be able to. Those things are fast, man.
Yeah.
So, regardless, and, you know, people will get mad because you said their thing wasn't a sport, but so what? What's wrong with a competition?
Yeah.
I mean, listen, this started with poker, which I love, right? I will play poker before. I've even said this. A big poker score is better than sex for me. Doesn't make it a sport, which certainly doesn't make me an athlete. So I have had something that I want to stir you up with that a little bit.
Okay, here we go.
Bad request again. What the hell?
Is it about Kirk Cousins?
It is about Kirk Cousins.
Of course.
Yeah.
No, well, I want you to realize, like, I feel like you think I'm a bigger Kirk Cousins fan than what
well,
I really
and I feel
am.
Like you think that, your original point the other day is that people don't really respect him.
Mm-hmm.
I think the real reason for that is, and I think this is stupid, they look at the money he's making and that he's made, and they're judging him on that. And that's when you look at the guy and say he's not that good, based on what he's making.
That's fair.
That's where I think that comes from.
I mean, that's the Joe Flacco argument.
Right. I just like tweaking you on it.
Like, Joe Flacco, serviceable quarterback, makes more money than he's worth.
Because he and his agent played this perfectly, you're supposed to.
Yeah.
You know, and hey, for the Vikings, it doesn't matter. If he gets them where they want to go, then he's worth every penny. So I don't care about that so much. You know Jay Gruden?
I do know Jay Gruden.
You familiar with him?
Yeah.
Says Alex Smith, better quarterback than Kirk Cousins.
Okay. Well, I can name a lot of coaches better than Jay Gruden. What, like, I don't.
Yeah, why all the hatred of Jay Gruden all of a sudden?
It's not necessarily hatred of Jay Gruden. It's just
why does no one respect Jay Gruden?
I don't know. I guess.
Why
for
do
me,
you not respect Jay Gruden?
I don't understand. It, like, if Jay Gruden's last name was different,
Jay O'Brien.
I don't know. Yeah.
What if he were Jay O'Brien?
I don't know that he would. I don't know that he'd still have a job. I mean, I don't think of. I don't. I guess I don't think much of him as a coach, but. That's just me.
I see.
28-35, his career record in the NFL. And one tie.
Yeah, don't forget the one. Because yeah, that's one more than O'Brien has.
Yeah.
But, no, obviously you have to say that, right?
Of course. He's your new quarterback.
He's your new quarterback. And I'm sure in a perfect world, and I'm sure Gruden had nothing to do with the fact that they couldn't re-sign him.
And I think that in a lot of ways, maybe he's right. I don't know that I would say slam dunk Kirk Cousins is better than Alex Smith.
I think it depends on the team you have. If I'm the Jacksonville Jaguars, I think I might be better with Alex Smith than I would with Kirk Cousins.
But you know what? You know what I think about the Washington Redskins? I think they're going to be better off, or they would have been better off with Kirk Cousins than they will be with Alex Smith. Because the rest of their team is not good enough.
That I agree with.
So when you and that's why. Even really to a point, the Vikings may have been better off with Alex Smith than Kirk Cousins.
Because I think those teams are really, really close and just need a
They need somebody to not screw it up.
Right.
And not that Kirk Cousins is a screw it up guy, but Alex Smith is like the safest arguably, with the exception of you know, maybe like Aaron Rodgers, who just doesn't turn the ball over. Alex Smith is like the safest quarterback out there.
I would agree.
So I don't know. I mean, I think you can make arguments for both, but I do think that it boils down to what the rest of the team around you looks like. And Jay Gruden's going to find out the hard way. There ain't a whole ton of talent there in Washington.
No. And, yeah, I do think that I do think that the Redskins have some players. I think – but I don't know that there's enough there with Alex Smith as a guy to be able to – for them to do anything. So, yeah, we missed our race at Oakland.
You guys suck.
Well, I was trying to beat a 1-2 shot. He did not cooperate. You know, what are you going to do?
There's a reason he was 1-2, Fred.
Apparently.
He was the best horse there.
Yes, he was.
Should have just let him take you, get you a little bit of money.
Yeah.
You went for the big score.
Well, of course. That's what I always do. I'm always going to bet against horses like that. 281 wants to know which Gruden will last longest in the league.
John
will, because there's no way they're going to get rid of him, even if he sucks for the next 3 years, which he could. I don't know that he can still coach. I know that's really sexy because everybody's seen him on TV, and he does his quarterback camp. But the guy hasn't coached in the league in a long time, and he was pretty mediocre at the end.
Yeah.
So
I mean, if the Redskins have another losing season, I would assume that Jay Gruden's probably done.
You would think. I think Daniel Snyder's been way more patient with him than I would have expected.
Yeah.
And I don't know if he's just trying – if this is just – he's sort of turning into Jerry Jones, where it's like, no, I'm just going to stick with this guy no matter what, because I've gone through a whole bunch of guys.
4-12 his first season.
Okay. I mean, that's your first year. You can write that
right
off.
Right. 9-7 and a playoff appearance second season.
So he O'Brien to year two.
Yep. But he won the division, lost to Green Bay in the NFC wildcard game.
Yeah.
8-7-1 the next year.
Also O'Brien-like, so you can't really get rid of him.
7-9 last year. You throw one more stinker in there, I think he's donezo.
Yeah.
Because, like you said, Snyder, typically not a patient man.
Come on, here are the Titans firing their guy after he gets him
right.
A playoff victory. So, yeah, I think he's a pretty mediocre coach so far. I mean, that's very similar to Bill O'Brien's resume. It really is.
Yeah.
So, you know, we'll see. I think he's going to be one of those guys that, as an offensive coordinator, will always be better than he is as a head coach.
Well, and also remember, O'Brien, like it may be, but there's a lot of differences in the patience level of Bob McNair versus Daniel Snyder.
True.
I mean, Bob McNair.
I think he's doing fine.
Bob McNair will put up with mediocrity basically forever. Daniel Snyder, he doesn't believe in that.
No, and I mean, Daniel Snyder has pretty much tried everything with that yep. team and really hasn't worked. But to his point, I think it comes down to fit, and I don't know that for what the Redskins are, that they're better off with Alex Smith than they would be with Kirk Cousins. That I'm admitting to, but I was trying to get you riled up. It didn't work.
I'm sorry. I'm pretty reasonable when it comes to the guy.
Not really, but that's okay.
Okay.
That's okay. You don't have to be reasonable. Every now and then you can be a yeller. It's all right. That's part of the job. It's in the job description. Like there's certain guys that you have to be unreasonable about. And so he's on your list now, so I have to remove somebody
else.
He's
not on my list.
Maybe I take Joe Flacco off your list. Well, I could take Carson Palmer's off your list because he's dead.
He's retired.
He's dead, so we don't have to deal with him anymore.
He's still alive.
So
he's just retired.
On your list now, Kirk Cousins replaces Carson Palmer as a guy you will defend to the death.
But I don't want to defend him to the death.
But you do. But that's okay. That's okay. It's like yeah, he's on the list with Jay Cutler.
You're forcing me.
I'm not forcing you.
I mean, that's kind of what you're doing. You're saying that I have to defend him at all times.
No. Well, you will, because that's a guy I can goad you into defending.
Maybe
like,
so.
Would you go to the mat for Tyrod Taylor?
No.
Okay, there you go. Ryan Tannehill?
No.
I think I know the answer to that.
No.
But Kirk Cousins, yes.
Are you trying to put those guys in the same conversation?
See what I mean? There you go.
I mean, it's just absurd.
Just took the bait. 713-780-ESPN. Roll asked, did you guys see the Raiders cut King? Gruden might wear out his welcome very quickly. I mean, it's a punter. He's a flashy punter, but it's a punter. I'm sure that – I don't know that I want flash out of my punter. I want a guy that's going to go out there and boom at 60 yards, and that's it. So the fact that you know who he is, it's probably not a good thing for a punter.
Probably not.
Just –
Yeah. Didn't he bang a Kardashian or something?
Yeah.
Is he the one that was like alleged that he? Maybe I've got it wrong, but I feel like it was alleged that Kim Kardashian cheated on Kanye with Marquette King.
Yeah, well, somebody did.
Somebody said
it was,
that.
Well, one of the Kardashians, I don't know if it was Kim, because I'm not as up on pop culture as you are. But right. One of the Kardashians allegedly did.
You know who probably knows is Tim Kirkjian.
No. But it might have been Kim.
I think it was.
Because the others weren't all that, I don't know if they were all that tied down at the time. Somebody wants to know if you can argue Cousins in the Mighty Gwen voice. That would be funny.
Did you see that, thank you. Did you see that ESPN did a letter grade for all 32 teams for free agency?
I did not.
One team got an A. You want to guess?
It's either Minnesota or Jacksonville.
It's Minnesota.
Okay.
Minnesota gets the lone A.
See, I'm giving Jacksonville an A, too, in my world, but they didn't ask me.
Jacksonville, where are they? Jacksonville got a C+.
Okay. That's dumb.
I'm not sure why just a C+. But we'll get to that
in
a bit.
They got the quarterbacks aside, to me, the most impactful player available, but that's all right.
The B pluses, and my second A probably would have gone to the LA Rams.
Yeah, I think that's an A as well.
But they get a B plus. The lowly Buffalo Bills get a B plus. The Steelers and the Tampa Bay Bucks get B pluses. Bs for Chicago, Cincinnati, Cleveland, Chargers, Patriots, Raiders, Eagles, Niners, Titans, and the Houston Texans. You think a B is about right?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, usually I grade harder than these guys. I think some of those grades are too low. I probably give the Texans a B+, frankly.
Yeah, I don't know.
I think they've got three starters on the offensive line, all of which are an upgrade over what they had last year. I don't know how much of an upgrade.
Right.
But certainly
an upgrade. Are they serviceable starters is
yeah,
what's to be
determined. I think they are. I don't know.
I think Fulton is.
And I think Kelemete is. And almost everybody, even in New Orleans, raved about him.
Yeah.
And if Henderson winds up being healthy and not
– not weedy.
Not weeding.
Yeah. Then he's going to weed, though.
Oh, of course he is. But weed now, not later. That's all I ask. But I also think you got the best available safety. at a position of need, and you got a really good nickel corner. I think that's I think that grade's better. I think the Jaguars deserve an A. I think the Rams deserve an A.
Part of the reason the Texans got a B, at least part of the reason why they were graded so high, is because they didn't have any significant losses, it says.
That's part of it, too. They got rid of guys who were useless, like Xavier Suofilo.
Right. Tom Savage.
Right.
Giacomini.
Chris Clark.
Brian Cushing.
Brian Cushing was a zero by the end.
So, and then they kept Jonathan Joseph, which probably plays into it a little bit as well. So I thought it was interesting to see that. The team with the worst grade, there was only one D. It was the Indianapolis Colts, who
really
re-signed Adam Vinatieri, but haven't done much else, it says here.
Okay. Didn't they get Eric Ebron? I thought that was a good pickup for a guy who was cut.
That's true.
That gives him a weapon. But, yeah, they didn't do much else other than that, but I don't know.
The Dolphins signed Danny Amendola and Frank Gore, and it says, and they got older. They get a C-.
Yeah, see, their grade to me would be lower because you basically cut your best defensive player and maybe your best offensive player.
Yeah.
So I'm not too high on what they did, but I'm a little surprised at some of these. Who wrote this? I guess that's my...
It was like Sarah Barshop wrote on the Texans, so everybody gave their local team a grade, like the team that they cover a grade, which also not really a fair
You know what you should do is have Sarah Barshop grade the Jaguars.
Right.
Have Jaguars got, you know, do it within the division, but have somebody else outside do it.
Because these guys are too close to it.
Yeah, and they, I think they either are going to grade too harshly or...
Too kindly.
Too kindly. It's almost impossible to not do one or the other. All right, we're way over for a break.
All right, well, I will tell you about the Rockets then. Season tickets now on sale for 2018-19. You can reserve your Rockets VIP experience like never before. For the first time ever, you can lock in your ticket price for the next three seasons with a three-year club seat ticket package. Three seasons, one price. No need to worry about the price of season tickets going up, which they will if the Rockets continue to do what they're doing. Also, if you buy now, you're on the priority list for this year's playoff tickets, and there's going to be a lot of playoff basketball in Houston this year. The three-year VIP plan offer for the club seats only, but all other price levels are on sale as well right now. Simple way to get them. Go to Rockets.com or give them a call, 713-627-DUNK, and get yours today. That's Rockets.com or 713-627-DUNK for 2018-19 Rockets season tickets.
Hello! To call into the HRNP listener line, dial 713-780-ESPN.
Dial the phone.
Looking to outsource your company's HR and payroll? Get the top initiative and smart solutions with HRP.net.
It's a RentersWarehouse.com roadshow from San Houston Race Park. This is The Blitz on ESPN 97.5. Here's Fred Fowler and A.J. Hoffman.
And we are back on The Blitz. So I want to recap your plays on the Final Four for the people. It's available at sportsmap.com, his previews, but... for those who have not had a chance to read that fine article yet.
I don't know who wouldn't read it. I mean, it's obviously...
Yeah, everybody should. You know,
it's tremendous.
It's the best.
It's tremendous.
And you should read it so you'll learn everything you need to know about these teams tomorrow. And if you go to a party or a bar or anything like that, you'll be able to sound like a genius.
Yeah, I'm going to end up staying away from the Loyola-Michigan game.
Okay. We're leaning Michigan.
Yeah, I don't know. It's so tough. The number seems like it's about right, and my prediction was 65-61 Michigan. So if you feel comfortable with my prediction being a point away from the actual spread, then good for you. But that's not enough for me to feel good about it. Loyola's they're great. The run has been great, and the way that Loyola wins games is they're a little bit like. they're a little bit like Virginia. I mean, they're not as dominant defensively, but they're a little bit like them in that they count on their defense to play well, and they don't overwhelm you with size. They have a bunch of grinding type guys. They make the extra pass. They space the floor. They've got one big man in Cameron Crutwig, and he is, to me, kind of the key of this whole game. If they can get him involved, I think he can do some damage in the post against Michigan. That's the, you know, that's how they're gonna try to win. They're gonna try to get Clayton Custer to penetrate, and they're gonna try to get it off to Crutwig. The problem comes on the other end because Cameron Crutwig can't defend on the outside, and we saw what happened with A&M when their bigs struggled to defend Mo Wagner outside. Mo Wagner just had a day. I mean, Crutwig's not the kind of guy who can be running around the three-point line chasing Mo Wagner. And so I don't know if they can afford to keep him on the floor all day. Michigan's just got so much size. It's overwhelming. If Loyola can shoot at 50%, which is their season average, I think that they can win the game. The problem is Michigan is so great defensively that it's going to be very difficult. And I do give Loyola a chance in a close game, especially to cover, because Michigan is so poor at free throw shooting. And if you can extend a game against them, you've got a chance to make a game out of something that maybe wouldn't be as much of a game. But I don't feel great about it either way. I predicted 65-61. The total's 129.5. I do think it's an under game. Which, again, plays into what Loyola wants it to be, but I just don't know if they've got enough horses.
You still like North Texas tonight at -5?
I do.
Okay.
Yeah, I think North Texas should dominate. The other game, Kansas and Villanova, they're very similar in a lot of ways. They're two teams that like to bomb it, and they're going to hit a lot of threes. Maybe the biggest difference is Azubuike for Kansas, who really dominated in the Duke game, particularly on defense against a front court that is better than anything Villanova's got in the front court. But the key guy, I mean, Devontae Graham's their best player, but the key guy for Kansas in this tournament has really been Malik Newman, who's just shot the ball he's out of this world. The problem is Mikael Bridges, who is a lottery pick, and it's funny in this game with Jalen Brunson and Devontae Graham and all these guys, these great college players, it's easy to forget that Mikael Bridges is probably the best NBA prospect on the floor. He's a 6'7" guy who will be out there in Malik Newman's face and making things difficult for him. And I think that if he can't have the day that he's been having, it'll be tough for Kansas to win. I just think Villanova's far and away the best team. I've got them winning 91-79, so not really a close game, but a lot of scoring. I do like the over on it, but Villanova, that's my primary play for this weekend.
All right. One hockey play tonight that if you can get six on the over six on Toronto and the Islanders, do it. It's jumped to 6.5, which is as high as I've seen all year. I still kind of like it, but I like it a lot more at 6. All right, quick break. We will have RJ Bell joining us next. Talk a little more gambling. Don't go anywhere. It's the Blitz on ESPN 97.5.
This is Ed Too Tall Jones, and you're listening to ESPN 97.5.
It's a RentersWarehouse.com roadshow from San Houston Race Park. This is The Blitz on ESPN 97.5. Here's Fred Fowler and A.J. Hoffman.
And we are back on The Blitz live here at San Houston Race Park. My first bets of the quarter horse meter in. Races start at 7 o'clock tonight. Come on out and join us. Right now joining us is the gambling guru of the universe. You know him as the great R.J. Bell. Follow him on Twitter at R.J. in Vegas. And probably the only person worthy of Led Zeppelin for his intro song. What's going on, R.J.?
You know, how cool would it be, you know, being on Ballers, with The Rock was cool, I can't lie. But like a Star Trek movie where there's like a intergalactic sports book and somehow I have a cameo.
So that would be your next, that's your next dream thing?
I would say it's right. I mean, it would fit the intro. So I just want to stay on brand is what they call it.
Okay. As long as we got that right. Let's talk a little bit about the NCAA tournament. Is there anything that we've learned from this year that we can kind of put in our notebook for next year to looking ahead to say, okay, here's what happens at the Final Four? Are there any trends that have continued or changed or anything that we can look forward to next year with?
Yeah, you know, as much as this has been a underdog's year, and here's a great way to quantify that. So what we do after every day of action is say, what happens if you had bet all the games on the money line at the current odds, money line odds, and picked them all right? How much would you have won with a parlay, let's say a money line parlay? So after the first day, there's 16, right? Assume you're 16-0, 32-0, et cetera, 40-0. We're now at 60-0, three games left. If you had gotten all 60 right, so this is really effectively a perfect bracket so far. The odds, 1.1 quadrillion. So there's million, billion, trillion, then quadrillion. Now, last year at this time, when there was 60 out of 60, it was 1.46 trillion. So literally this year, over 770 times less likely. So for every time last year happened, or I guess we'd flip it, for every time something would be as unlikely as this year with all the underdogs, you know, Virginia losing, etc., is last year would happen 770 times for every one time this year happened. So just it's quantifiable. This has been an underdog year. Now, that said, not a lot of bracket rules were broken. We've got our 14 bracket rules we do every year. Now, 16 versus 1, you know, that broke history. We know that one when Virginia lost. But Loyola, the only thing they broke was this last win, where they're just the fifth time since seedings began in 1979 that a Final Four team has been a double-digit seed. So that's unusual, right? Fifth time ever. But otherwise, there hasn't really been a win by any team that surprised. So there was a lot of accumulation of underdogs winning, but really very few historic upsets. Very last thing, here's something that once again followed the bracket history, is it's now 27 of 34 years. So 27 times, 7 times not, that there's been exactly one or two number one seeds in the Final Four. So my guess is about 40% of brackets will have either zero, which is rare, four, which is rare. But boy, there's a lot of people pick three number ones to make the Final Four. And history says that's rare, 27 out of 34 times, exactly one or two number one seeds.
Interesting stuff. So where do we go from here? If you're playing and you've missed out on an opportunity with Loyola or something like that, Where's the play for you now to try to cash a little bit here in these last three games?
So what's fascinating about Loyola, one of the things, is typically we talk about mechanical parlays, where if you can replicate a future ticket by betting money lines in individual games, which is a mechanical parlay, oftentimes that's the better approach. So let's use Loyola as an example. You could have bet them to win their region as a future, or you could have bet them to win their first game, their second game, their third game, their fourth game, letting the winnings ride each time. 100 turns into, you know, let's say 310 or so, because they were underdogs at first, but they weren't that big of dogs. But, you know, you understand now, you bet that whole 310, the next time it keeps going. Now, if you'd done that with Loyola, your 100 would be $2,583 now. Now, that's the, so 25 to 1 about, okay, 25-4-1. Kansas, 100 would have been 578. Michigan, 100, 443. Villanova, 100, 203. Now, that's not winning 203. That's turned into 203, which means you only win 103. So, literally, Villanova has been about even money to win those four games, which just shows you how dominant, how, you know, how easy their path was, however you want to explain it. So, either double your money or 25 times your money with Loyola. But here's the thing. If you had bet before the tournament just for them to win their region, 70-1. So this is a rare case where your future bet had a much, much bigger payoff for Loyola to win the region than if you would have bet them four times letting it ride to win the games. Now, it's got me thinking about my general advice, which is, and I've given it on this show five or six times, if you can do a mechanical parlay, it's usually better. Here's where I'm going to caveat that now. And I think we all know the older you get, the more knowledgeable you get, the more exceptions there are in life. That's why when you do have a beautiful rule that you can trust 100%, it's wonderful, right? You know it's true in all cases. Is if your long shot making it requires, in almost all cases, there to be significant upsets and thus they have a much easier path to get there, then you maybe lean towards the future bet, because here's the thing. The mechanical parlay is going to be based upon how difficult your path actually is. And if the only way you actually win is by that team's path ending up being less difficult than expected, a la Virginia is not in their way, you know, and obviously other cases too, then I think you maybe think about the future. Now, I'm not sure if the future is always the answer versus the mechanical parlay, but I think it's not as clear cut that the mechanical parlay is the answer in such cases.
RJ Bell is our guest, and I know there's been a lot of talk about the $25,000 ticket that's going to pay $1 million if Michigan wins. What kind of hedging is Derek Stevens doing on that ticket to make sure he comes out with a profit?
Yeah, so I actually tweeted out that ticket, blew it up, and it's nice and clear and easy to read at RJ in Vegas. Is we've got a report now, and this guy's smart. I've met Derek a few times. He's actually going to be on our podcast next week, so that should be exciting. Not only is he a casino owner, right, in his 40s, so meaning a youngish guy to be a casino owner, so you got to give him credit there, but he's had a vision, right? So you go on the strip, you want to buy the Bellagio, whatever. Okay, that's going to be tough. But especially if you're a young guy and you want to own it yourself. He went down and bought some distressed properties and have really rebranded them and the D downtown. So to me, an interesting fellow, but he's got gamble in him. And I'll tell you, the old time guys, there's a good movie. I'm sure you guys have seen it. The Cooler, right? Have you seen that?
Yeah.
And it has Alec Baldwin, and it's an old-time Vegas. It's a set maybe 10 years ago. Old-time Vegas guy, and things are changing, right? There's a pirate ship and all the things the old-time guys lament. But what it shows is those old-time guys like to be the house, but they also had gamble in them. They're walking, you know, the mob guy that's the secret owner is walking by a table. He says, hey, we've got 5 minutes. Let me play here. Pulls out, he's got like, you know, 3,000 in his roll, starts playing craps, right? These guys got into gambling because they love gambling. And when you have, you know, the MGM, you know, billion-dollar corporation hiring a CEO, they care if you went to Harvard. They don't care if you gamble. Now, in some ways, that's great. I think in other ways, it's not. Well, Derek Stevens, the guy that's got gamble in him. And like you said, he bet $25,000 to win $1 million on Michigan, and it's amazing to see that ticket with the $1 million, the one, you know, and the 000000, the two comma club, as they say. And he now, and we have a report, he is hedging, but just modestly, 25,000 on Loyola plus 5, 25,000 Loyola plus 210 on the money line to win straight up. So what's interesting is, if somehow, some way, Michigan wins, but by less than 5 points, he'll break even on these bets and still have his live $1 million ticket with one game to go. And then obviously, if Loyola wins the game outright, well, he's going to win his 210 on, so he'll win about 50,000 and change on the money line bet, 25,000 on the plus five. That 25 makes up for the ticket price, so he'll profit, you know, over 50K. So he set himself up where he's got a possible middle and also a guaranteed 50K profit. But obviously, he's rooting on Michigan to win the next two games. It'll be interesting if they do win this game, and they are a five-point favorite over Sister Jean and the team. It'll be interesting to see how much he hedges on Monday's game.
Well, yeah, that's what I was curious about, particularly if it's Villanova. I would imagine that it's going to be he's going to have to risk a lot more to hedge against a team like that, because Michigan will be, I would guess, a pretty substantial underdog, maybe in that 4 or 5 point range.
How much did you think, AJ?
Oh, I would expect if it's Michigan and Villanova, probably in the somewhere in 4 to 6 range.
Yeah. Yeah, we projected out and we gave this to the AP, and we don't talk about this much, but we're actually the official pregame.com official odds provider, exclusive and official for the Associated Press. But we have Nova 5.5 against Michigan, Nova 9.5 against Loyola, Kansas 1.5 against Michigan, Kansas 5.5 against Loyola.
Interesting. Hey, can we switch gears a little bit? Because I noticed in your World Series odds that the Houston Astros have become the favorite now at 5-1 over the Yankees and Dodgers.
Because they started out 1-0.
It's that 1-0 start, right? That does it?
Well, these are the entering the season odds. So what do you – I mean, I know you guys are more skeptical than most about the local teams. What do you think?
I mean, the Astros deserve – this is warranted. They deserve to be in that conversation. They've got one of the most talented teams. I think it's always difficult to repeat, you know, and their team is good enough to win the World Series, but the Yankees are really good, the Indians are really good, the Dodgers are really good, the Nationals are really good. So at this point, I don't think it would be, you know, a huge upset if they didn't win, but they're absolutely in the conversation of teams that could win it.
You know, I've been asked a good bit about the World Series odds, and something, as I've thought about it, I've never really said before. And again, it's another example where, you know, if this were science and it were simple science, you'd get bored with it. I think the beauty is, like they say about Hold'em, right? A minute to learn, a lifetime to master. You keep thinking of new stuff, not to mention the leagues change and the leagues evolve, and you got to evolve with them. Is, you know, we'll be talking about the NFL with the targeting rule, and you know, does that hurt teams like this, you know, more aggressive defensive teams like Pittsburgh? Does it help the offenses more? Every year, you know, you got to consider that stuff. But one thing the Sabermetric guys have done a great job on is they've pretty much ascertained they can't identify anything in the playoffs that's predictive. Like, so you can say, you know, Mike Lombardi, a media guy in the NFL that I think is excellent, you know, worked with Belichick and all that. He said, look at 3rd-and-1 and 4th-and-1. And teams that do well on those downs, when they need a yard, they're going to get a yard. Oftentimes, you know, think about how many games, if a team can just convert that first down, it's over. They don't. They kick and they lose. That happens like a third of the time, it seems like. The play like that dictates it one way or the other. So in every sport, there's usually stats that are super meaningful come championship time. In baseball, no one can find any. And you think about it, I mean, how is there any sport where the team with the best record wins less than baseball? So, you know, meaning best record, they get in the playoffs, but they don't win the World Series. I think what you do, and this is a new thought with these World Series odds, is you handicap who's going to make the playoffs. Like, who on here has the best odds or the biggest payoff that you think has a heck of a chance to make the playoffs? Now, the correlation is going to be division, where if you're really down on a division, you think, hey, this team might have the 8th best record, but I think they win their division because the division's weak. All of a sudden now you might be able to get a 35-1 payoff. And once you get to the World Series, yeah, you've got to win those multiple games. Multiple series. But again, we don't. It's not like being a better regular season team is correlated to winning. So I don't know if you guys have any thoughts on that, but thinking about it from their chance to win a division more than are they the best team is an interesting, I think, alternative approach.
The problem, at least to me with that, is the teams that are likely to win their divisions. Fred and I talked about this yesterday. It seems like there's seven teams that I would say today you can probably pencil into the playoffs. Six division winners and the Red Sox or the Red Sox or the Yankees, whoever you think will win the division and be the wild card. So, and those happen to be the top seven prices on the board. So I don't know that there is necessarily a team I look at with a 30-1 or something.
Well, who's the seventh though? Who's the worst? Who's got the biggest odds amongst them?
Well, the Red Sox do 12-1 of those seven teams.
Okay. So, boy, it'd be nice if it was just one other, right? Because the next one is the Cardinals at 21.
Right.
21-1, you start being able to take a long shot.
Right. But
hey, listen.
That's obviously why Vegas has their casinos. They know what they're doing. They've built a pretty good thing here, and they're not going to give us a great price on a team that's good.
Well, hey, listen. When I went to Ohio State and took all those finance classes is back in 1992 – there was a thing that was huge, and now we've reevaluated it, the financial community, but it's called the efficient market hypothesis, which is pretty much everything that's known is built into the price. And the theory was, if you believe that, then no one can beat the market. Would I know 155% sure? So that's, I know it, is the sports betting market is less efficient drastically than the financial market, because there's trillions of dollars in the financial market, right? And much less in sports betting. And usually the more liquid a market is, the more efficient it is. And that's why if you can bet low-level props, if you only bet $50 a game, you know, you shouldn't focus on the NFL if you're trying to make money, right? Because you can bet the WNBA, and the fact you're betting small amount of money doesn't hurt you. You know, they're small limits. You don't get hurt by them, but there's so much less liquid the market, thus it's less efficient. So I agree with you, AJ. 9 times out of 10, maybe 19 out of 20, the line's right. But when the line's right, you can't win. Now, you can win that individual bet, but in the long run, all the bets you make when the price is right, you're going to lose the vig. And finding those rare times the price is wrong, well, I've got to believe you can do it. And since I've, you know, seen people that I work with on a daily basis winning year after year, and obviously even good guys will have a losing year, but I don't think a guy like Fezzik, who, you know, like just as he's been at pregame, he's won 4 out of 5 years, and the 1 year it was just lost by a little bit. If over those years, if you have, 2,000 plays, it's kind of hard to think you can bet 2,000 games, win money 4 out of 5 years, and it's luck, right? So I agree with you. The market's mighty efficient. It's just now and again, they're wrong.
All right, that's RJ Bell. You follow him on Twitter at RJ in Vegas. Always great stuff, my friend, and look forward to talking to you again next week.
Thank you, guys.
All right. That's RJ Bell. He has a thing on there that I wanted to get to, which we'll save for next week because, yeah, I think it begs a little more discussion than a minute and a half, but how much money Vegas actually makes for every dollar they make on sports betting compared to everything else, like craps and blackjack.
What do you mean how much they make?
They make so much more money on all the other games.
On table games?
Yes.
Oh, of course, yeah.
And it kind of lines up almost. The way it lines up is very fascinating. Which
is blackjack number one?
No, it is not, and it's not even close. And many years ago, when I was freelance writing, the only table game in the casino where you can even get even money, and it's on the second roll, is craps.
Yeah.
$2.94 for every dollar that they made on sports betting was made on craps. That's the lowest. Blackjack's $8.31. Roulette is second.
No joke.
Yeah. And just to show you, stuff like slot machines, bigger slot machines, $32.68 for every dollar they made on sports betting.
Wow.
So, you know, just a little thought on maybe what you should and shouldn't play. All right, guys, we're going to take a quick break. We got one more hour to go out here at Sam Houston Race Park. It is the Blitz on ESPN 97.5.
To call into the HRNP listener line, dial 713-780-ESPN.
Dial the phone.
Looking to outsource your company's HR and payroll? Get the top initiative and smart solutions with HRP.net.